Oh, Megan the one-eyed screaming pug is great.
Hey, Megan.
What the fuck?
Hello, senores and senoritas, and welcome back to Zero Credits, the show where we talk about things. I'm Seeing Dots.
And what's your name?
Oh, I'm Henry.
And I'm John.
And together, I'm Seeing Dots with John.
I'm not Seeing Dots, so you're kind of alone on this one.
They've cleared up.
Nice.
Had a huge coughing fit before we started recording.
Yep, I was there for that.
Alright.
Thanks, Mountain Dew.
Thanks. Well, actually, it's the Crushed Vanilla Freeze from Taco Bell.
I had the Starburst Strawberry Freeze from Taco Bell. I assume that's what it's called.
I don't know.
Tasted like strawberries.
John?
Ah.
How are you doing?
I'm pretty okay.
Cool.
Life's pretty cool.
Nice.
I got a job.
Yay.
But other than that, not too much has changed.
Well, you got a job, so that's a weight of a world off your shoulder.
Indeed, I can pay rent now.
That's a huge thing.
Paying rent sucks. Paying rent is the worst.
You're right.
You know, not too long ago, I like to keep track of my finances, and I like to do that by way of a finance tracking app.
A finance tracking app?
Yeah. And this isn't me plugging or anything, so I won't say the name, but it sent me an email at one point. I was like, are you aware that your top spending category is rent? I'm like, yes, I am aware.
I think I read something that, oh man, there are two numbers. But the one number I remember is like 80% of America, most of their money, most of their paychecks go to rent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of how the world works.
Yeah. I mean, most people are living one or two paychecks away from homelessness.
Pretty much.
Which is crazy.
It really is. If you're not paying rent, you're paying a house note, which is kind of the same thing.
Essentially the same thing. It's working towards something else, whereas if you're paying a house note, you're paying down the interest and the principal on this thing that will eventually, maybe, one day be yours.
Yeah.
When you're paying rent, you're essentially just throwing money into a hole so that you don't die of exposure.
That's why people say it's better to own than it is to rent.
Yeah, most of the time it is better.
What about rent to own?
That can be tricky.
Yeah.
That can be tricky.
Yeah.
That can be tricky.
You could say that again.
Ah, but don't you deny my name three times.
Okay.
So how are you, Henry?
I'm doing all right.
Nice.
I spent a week out of the state.
Nice.
I was in the great state of Colorado.
Colorado?
Yeah.
How's that?
I was on a mountain for a week.
I get it. You were on a mountain because you're in Colorado. You know what they say about people in Colorado.
Most of them live on mountains because the Rockies run right through the state. Yeah,
the Rockies.
You're right. I did have trouble breathing because the altitude is so high.
The altitude. So high. Get it? Because in
I didn't have that much trouble breathing, John. All you have to do is drink, like, a gallon of water per hour, and altitude sickness can't touch you.
Oh, can't touch you.
I didn't smoke any marijuana while I was there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Well, no, I don't partake.
No, that's fair. kind of sucks that that's what people say about Colorado all the time.
It's a beautiful country.
It's like a whole different country up there in Country-rado.
You know, it's just like, nature is right there. We literally stayed on a mountain, and we saw deer.
Mm.
We saw moose. I saw prairie dogs in a parking lot for a rafting company.
Ooh.
Yeah. Went whitewater rafting. Went hiking.
Oh, whitewater rafting is super fun.
It was hell.
Not to get too baseball talk about it, but what was the rating of it?
It was, they called it gold medal class 4.
Gold medal class 4 sounds, that sounds like a lot.
Let's say this, the guides were super excited.
Mm-hmm.
The people who actually were like the rafters were super nervous and scared.
I can imagine.
It was literally about 3 hours of nonstop paddling,
mm-hmm.
with our guide pulling us over every few, you know, rapids and saying, all right, we're coming up to rapid number 5, and we're going to do this complicated maneuver. And if we don't do it, our raft is going to climb this wall and flip on us.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we don't want that to happen, so just don't do this, 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 this. Listen to everything I say. Paddle, you know, with strength immediately. It was just like, all these things piled up. We ended up bouncing off the wall. Like, we hit the wall and bounced off.
Nice.
It was good.
Did you flip?
No.
Yeah, I went to a... I've been whitewater rafting a few times, and the hardest one I had was a 3. Then in the middle, it was a 4. Then I had a couple class 5 rapids at the end. Then it became easy for like an hour, which was welcome at that point.
Yeah. We've never done class 5, but we have done like class 4 plus, which is like right before 5.
The first class 5 rapid I ever hit was on that exact journey, and the guy was like, okay, it's been pretty easy up until this point, but at the next rapid we hit, we're going to fall 16 feet. Cool.
That's really, wow.
He was like, we can go around it and not fall, but we will be sucked under the rapids if we do that, so we have to fall 16 feet to avoid doing that. I'm like, great, that's cool.
Don't you love how guides always are like, there's another alternative, but it's, you know, not really an alternative because we will die.
Yep. They're like, there's another thing we could do, and if you see it, you're going to want to do it. Avoid wanting to do it, because we will die if you all choose to do that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a guide's just on the end of the boat. You could mutiny and just go wherever if you wanted to.
I guess, like, if you guys could coordinate, because the guide's the one who's like, he's the one calling the strokes out.
Mm-hmm.
All I gotta say about whitewater rafting is stick to class 3, maybe the beginning of 4.
Because
after that point, it's work, you know? I felt like I had gotten beaten up.
The class 5 rapids I've hit have been the magnitude of, you don't really enjoy what's happening because you can't see what's happening.
Oh, yeah, no.
Someone who's done it so many times is at the, like, prow of the boat, and he's telling you what to do, but you're just seeing spray, and you can't see what's happening, and you're falling, and you're twisting, and you're basically blind. It's awful.
And they're calling out strokes, and you stick your paddle down, and then it's just air?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what am I supposed to paddle?
I still don't know how it happened, but during class 4 rapid, I, and only I, was forcibly ejected from the boat.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Flew through the air into the water. No idea how it happened. The guy on the boat was like, yeah, I have no idea how that happened either. You flew out.
That's interesting. I also have flown out of a raft during a class 4 rapid.
Nice.
It was horrifying.
Yep. Because there's this moment, and I know it's overplayed saying, oh, you know, you have these moments where life goes in slow motion. And I think that's true sometimes. But, like, when you're flying through the air, it's kind of in real time.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is awful, what's happening? I'm like, you're just thinking really fast, and you're looking around a lot.
And, I hit the water, and it was cold, so immediately it was like, ah!
Yep.
Why?
Yep.
Oh, so whitewater rafting's fun.
It's super fun.
Dangerous.
I love it.
Respect the river.
I mean, if you were to think about it as kayaking is like hiking in a boat, whitewater rafting is like boxing in a boat.
It's like sprinting off a cliff.
Yeah, it's like sprinting off a... It's like running a suicide in a boat.
Pretty much.
You can't really stop, and you don't know what's about to happen.
And like, if you get scared, there's nothing you can do but keep going.
Yep.
It's really good.
The rapids are making sure of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep wanting to go back up to Tennessee to do their class 5 rapids, which sound like a lot of fun, but they're apparently really scary.
I won't do anything above a 4. I don't want to.
I want to do a certain class 5 rapid up there, and they were like, yeah, 13 people have died on here ever, so it's pretty good.
Well, 13 is good forever.
Yeah.
Because 50 people die on the river that I went on a year.
Yep. 13's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like in history. God. Well, glad you didn't die.
Thank you.
Being outside's cool.
Yeah.
I want to do more stuff like that.
We hiked up, it was a mountain, I don't know what it was. It's called McCullough Gulch. And halfway up, there's a really nice waterfall. It's like, oh, this is great. But then everyone you talk to at that waterfall says, yeah, just up the way a little bit is this lake. It's just a little bit further up the trail. What they don't tell you is getting up to the waterfall is a nice kind of like gradient slope.
Mm-hmm.
After the waterfall, it is a straight up climb.
Ooh.
But we did it.
Nice.
It was me and my mother and my uncle and my aunt. And by the time we hit the lake at the top, we kind of just wanted to fall into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were at it. There was so much snow on the ground, it covered the trail. We lost the trail in snow.
Oh, man.
In July.
That sounds like fun.
It was crazy.
I want to do that.
Yeah, hiking's really fun. It's a lot of work, but you're not moving at a fast pace, and as long as you're controlling your breathing,
mm-hmm.
you're like doing the same work as, I guess, jogging.
Yeah.
But it feels easier because you're going slower.
I miss being outside doing stuff like that. I remember the last time I went hiking out to one of the largest sinkholes in America.
Nice.
Which was fun. And hiking to it, you never... When you're hiking sometimes and you lose track of your breathing and how fast you're going, you can wear yourself out real fast.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, my group was just really excited to see the sinkhole, and, like, we were going extremely fast, and we got lost, so we looped around. Like, by the time we got to it, we were so tired.
Oh.
So tired.
It can be dangerous just because a lot of hiking is you're hiking to get to, like, a vantage point or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for the most part, you're going through trees and stuff. Trees aren't that interesting to look at.
Yeah.
So you kind of skip over it, skip through it until you see something of interest, and then you'll slow down. Hiking up a mountain is 95% that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't speed up because you're going up in elevation with every step.
Yep.
Like, oh. But it was worth it. It was good.
I mean, if nothing else, a lot of people have been spending a lot of time outside lately.
Oh, what do you mean? Why are you saying stuff about other people? Are you trying to get us into a segment?
I'm trying to do a segue to a... not a segment. Just a different topic of conversation, I suppose.
Oh, from point A to point go?
Oh, maybe it's time for you to ask the magic question.
What are we doing, John?
Playing Pokemon Go.
Oh, we are? Hold up. I gotta get my phone out. Alright, that's the camera. Where is the app? There it is. There's nothing around.
Wait.
This game has music?
Yeah. Why don't you have anything in your apartment?
Ooh, a Paris!
What? You got a Paris?
Yeah, but the Pokeball's spinning so much I can't touch it to catch it.
I don't have this Paris, and I feel like you're messing with me.
It's right there. It's,
why would you lie to me about this?
See, the Pokeball is still spinning.
Yeah.
So that means I can't touch it.
Oh.
So. I feel like this is really representative of the launch of this app.
Pretty much.
Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go.
It's made by Niantic.
Niantic?
Niantic.
What is Niantic?
They're a small app making company that made a game called Ingress.
Oh, is it the Ingress people?
It is the Ingress people.
Because I used to play Ingress once upon a time, and I thought that this was a blatant ripoff.
You are the only person to have ever played Ingress.
It seemed like it. I owned that one town.
So how did Ingress work?
Basically the exact same way that, let's explain what Pokemon Go is.
Pokemon Go is a fun new game for your mobile phone. You catch Pokemon by flicking little balls at them.
Yeah, and the world of Pokemon Go is aggregated by, like, satellite data.
It is?
So the world that you walk around is the world that exists in real life, and monuments and landmarks are Pokestops or gyms, and gyms are places you fight other people's Pokemon, and you have a team that's a certain color, and if you capture that gym, it gets captured for your color.
And that gives you prestige points or something.
If you own a gym for more than 24 hours, you get, like, perks.
You can get in-game currency to buy the in-game items to make the game easier.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure anyone in the world has gotten a gym for 24 hours yet, but...
I held one in the mountains because this game came out last week when I was in Colorado. And I held a gym for about 14 hours.
Nice. Very close.
Yeah.
Maybe as close as I've ever heard anyone getting.
It was a rest stop right before a bike path that literally, like, no one goes to.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, for sure, I would own that gym forever. But, of course, this game is insanely popular.
Unbelievably popular. Back to what I was saying. Ingress, basically exactly how this works, but with no Pokemon.
Oh, that's boring.
It's more boring, certainly. Less active and less insidious. I was explaining to my roommate today, who just got this game, how it works. And he said, oh, there's a Weedle in the kitchen if you want to go catch it. And I said, another Weedle. And he's like, oh, so you don't want it. It's like, of course I want it. There's no reason not to constantly to be catching things in this game. Because if you see something, you should catch it.
Yeah.
Because you always have something to gain by having more of something.
Each time you catch a Pokemon, you get experience, mm-hmm. which increases your level. And the higher a level, the higher level of more powerful Pokemon you can see.
And every time you catch a Pokemon, you get that Pokemon's candy, which can be used to power up or evolve Pokemon of that type.
Exactly.
Really dumb that Pidgeotto's, or whatever, anything that's evolved takes the base form's candy. I thought they would take their current form's candy so that you'd had to evolve things and get the experience from that to... Just thought it was a steeper climb than it actually is.
I thought you would get more from transferring fully evolved Pokemon than you do.
You don't.
You just get one candy.
You get one goddamn candy.
So why would I spend all this time catching a Pidgeotto who's, like, dumbly hard to catch when the Pidgey will give me the same amount of candy?
Yeah, and I mean, you might want to catch the Pidgey anyway because evolving it gets you 500 experience points.
It does.
And no doubt you have enough Pidgey candy to do it.
Probably.
But, yeah, that's this game.
Pokemon Go, I've had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, it's a great social tool. I've had really fun social interactions with people because we're all playing this dumb Pokemon game.
It's not dumb.
I mean, in terms of, like, you could be doing anything else, it's dumb, but...
Well, sure, but what else am I going to do when I'm driving?
Oh, God, Poke driving.
You should not do that.
You should not Pokey drive.
It's pretty impossible to do both at the same time.
Yep.
What I will do... On my drive to work now, I will, like... I'm taking a different route, and I'll slow down or stop by Pokestops to get items.
Yep.
But I won't do it, like, if there's traffic. Like, if I have to concentrate on the road, I'm gonna do that.
I mean, one of the craziest things I've seen in the last few days is I went up to a city to perform some comedy, and see some comedy, and see some friends. And there was a meetup in the city park for Pokemon Go players who wanted to, like, have a little bit of community. And there were dozens of people in this park with their phones out, scouring the grounds, yelling to each other, "Found an Abra! Found a Paris! Come here for a Meowth!" It was nuts, because this was 11 o'clock at night.
That's crazy.
People were illegally crossing across traffic. People were driving really slowly in cars, visibly on their phones. It was insane. It felt like the world was changing.
I have to ask, why do a lot of these meetups happen at night?
These people have jobs. Also, they feel safe during the day. So they want to feel a little safer at night, so they get together in big groups.
More safety in numbers.
But there was a time during that meetup when I was with a friend of mine and her fiancé, and our group that was about 11 or 12 strong, crossed over two lanes of traffic at night, illegally, to go into the grass beside the city hall to start looking for Pokemon in the city hall parking lot because we wanted that Nidoran. And I was like, man, this would be way darker if we all had horses.
What?
Like, if we all had horses, this would be a very grim image. Just people yelling out names. It would be like a fox hunt or like a manhunt.
Like an Old West, you know, posse hunt.
Like, if we were all on horses, this would look way more serious.
What a random thought.
Just, like, in the dead of night. That would be terrifying. But instead, we're just nerds and we got that Nidoran. Got a Meowth.
Nice.
Mm.
There's been a lot of weird things that have come out of this Pokemon Go kind of craze. One of them that comes to mind is a headline I read where a 19-year-old girl found a dead body in a river while playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah. Saw that. What is it, Wyoming?
I forget, but I did make a joke on Twitter about it.
Thanks.
That maybe the dead guy turned into a ghastly and she caught him.
Oh, no.
And then I hashtagged it, no one laugh. Yeah. Seriously too soon.
Yeah, poor dead guy.
And then I made a friend.
I mean, there were those kids who robbed like 11 people in Missouri.
I was going to bring that up too. People are targeting Pokemon Go players and robbing them.
They targeted them by playing Pokemon Go and popping a lure on a Pokestop. So there are two things in this game that make Pokemon come to you. The first one is an incense, and it makes Pokemon come to you and only you.
Yes.
If someone with an incense is around you, they can get Pokemon that you can't.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily... It just increases the likelihood of them seeing them, not you.
Exactly.
And if you put something called a lure on a Pokestop, it puts essentially an incense on the Pokestop, except all the Pokemon can be caught by everybody.
Yeah.
So if you're, I don't know, in a very populated park full of a lot of landmarks about the history of Elvis Presley... And all of those are Pokestops, and they all have lures. You can make a killing.
Pretty much.
But these people were playing Pokemon Go, and they put a lure on a Pokestop, and when people came to the Pokestop, they were robbed.
That is sinister.
It is. The world is changing. This is crazy.
I saw somebody made a comment that gamers are going to be tanned and buff now instead of, like, pale and, you know, unfit. Because you have to move... To play this, to get the most out of this game.
I'm really fascinated with it because you see, it's really like a gradient from its release to today. Because in the first 2 days, really the people who were downloading it the most were the people who were really tuned into it. They knew that Pokemon Go was going to be released on this day. So you saw all these people outside in it's almost like a zombie apocalypse scenario. Where at first you see one or two, like, downcast shufflers looking at their phone. And they look like the kind of people who would never be outside, generally speaking. And then every day the numbers grow by the dozens. And now it's like normal people, fit people, nerdy people. And people are getting exercise and socializing, which is great.
People of all ages are playing this game.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, like, grandmothers... With their phones out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming they're playing the game because no one walks with their phone in front of them looking at it constantly, right?
Yeah, no one does that, not really.
You're either moving your thumbs or texting or like you're certain... Like, the way that you kind of like... The way I walk around with this game is just having the map open and like looking at it every so often.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a huge, like, dork for doing that, but it's how you play the game.
It's how everyone plays the game. And it's really easy to feel like this is legitimately changing the world. At least for a short amount of time. The world is a different place than it was 2 weeks ago.
And the Nintendo shares have already gone up 25% since the release. The game has already grossed, I think at this point, $15 million in under a week.
Yep.
The developers, Niantic, have said they're going to do a bi-weekly update schedule.
Okay.
So every 2 weeks there'll be an update, not necessarily more content or more features, but they are promising for the long haul, basically.
Hmm.
Which means this game has the potential to have a longevity that we've only seen out of like Clash of Clans and Mobile Strike Go. I don't know.
I don't know names.
Yeah, I don't know names of apps, but like. Apps that kind of make it big stick around for a while.
I mean, look how much it's grown in the last week. And this game only has the base 150 Pokemon in it. Or it's like 134. No, wait. Mine only says 134 because that's the highest up the list. It's only the original 150, I believe.
I think they might also have like a Mew in there somewhere. So 151.
Mm-hmm.
They say they are planning on bringing more generations to the game, which I'm really excited about.
I mean, 900 and something Pokemon later, years down the road, is going to be huge.
And, I mean, by the time they could even get that far, Sun and Moon's already introduced... It's not even out yet, but it's introducing new Pokemon to the series, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they look... Well, the ones that were leaked today look awful.
Yeah.
For the most part, they look pretty awesome. I love Pokemon.
Are any of them as good as Piplup? Nothing is as good as Piplup.
There's Rowlet.
Nothing is as good as Piplup.
Rowlet's an owl.
You're right.
owls are pretty adorable.
He's got a little bow tie.
He's got a little bow tie and a smile. He's a smiling bow tie owl.
So Pokemon Go, very cool. I am in favor of it.
I love it.
Now, the only problem with Pokemon Go is that it's creating this fractious relationship between people when they find out that people they're friends with are on different teams. The philosophies of these teams are laid bare all over Facebook and things like that. And people are very clearly creating these strong defining lines between what this team represents in people.
Okay, so what is it? There's Valor.
Valor.
Which is red.
Mm-hmm.
There's Mystic.
Mystic.
Which is blue.
Yes.
And there's Instinct?
Instinct or Intuition, something like that. It's which yellow.
Is yellow.
Yeah.
And Valor is all about, like, the strength of a Pokemon.
Yeah.
I think Mystic is more about studying and evolution.
Yeah. It's like power of Pokemon, understanding Pokemon.
And then Ash Ketchum.
Yes.
Which, Instinct is just Ash Ketchum.
Yeah.
Ash Ketchum.
Instinct is like, we shouldn't think about the decisions we make. Just a Poke Pokemon.
Just a Poke Pokemon.
But,
So, John.
In keeping... John. With the fractious relationships that people are developing over this game, I think it's time that we reveal what team we are.
John.
What?
What team are you on, John?
Do you want to say it on three?
All right.
Okay. One, two, three.
Mystic.
Valor.
What the fuck?
Yep.
You're Valor?
Yep.
Why?
Team Valor all day.
Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Valor?
Mm-hmm.
The red team.
Mm-hmm.
The red team?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. You're one of those Valor, like, dunderheads.
Oh, gotta get the strongest Pokemon. Oh, you're all like, oh, I'm Team Mystic. I hold the door for everybody. Meh, I'm a good friend. Meh. Please, Miss, take my coat. Meh.
Please, Mistake.
Please, Miss, take my coat.
Mistake.
Please, Mistake my coat.
Mistick, Mistake. Is that what you're doing?
I get it. Yeah.
I liked blue. I like the color blue.
I like the color red.
Oh, we can never be friends.
Yeah. You know what made me choose Valor?
What?
It was the first color of a gym I saw. I was like, that seems like a good decision as any. Surely no one takes these seriously.
I honestly don't.
But everyone else does.
The funny thing is on campus, I see that where I work, blue has a lot of the gyms.
I think most people are Mystic. I think it's between Mystic and Valor.
Yeah, because who wants to be yellow?
Yellow's dumb.
Yellow is dumb.
Man, I hope no one who's Team Instinct listens to this podcast. If so, they should just stop.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
No. We have worked too hard to have these yellow instinct people listen to our podcast.
You know what? I don't want them.
All right, don't listen.
Their recommendations are worthless.
Oh, no. What if...
Okay, what if someone actually... Okay, don't actually stop. We love you.
We love everybody of all colors and creeds.
None of this matters. I was on campus, and I was walking around just catching some Pokemon like you do. Like a recent graduate do.
Yeah, like a recent graduate do.
And a group of people yelled at me because I was wearing red sneakers, and they were like, Team Valor? I was like... It's weird that you identified me by my clothing, but yeah.
Oh, wait a second.
Oh, no.
I'm wearing blue.
So am I.
I thought you were... Oh, a Pidgey.
Oh, God. But anyway, no.
It disappeared.
I met, like, 6 random-ass people through being a Pokemon team, so that's cool.
That's cool. We should go on a Pokewalk sometime.
Pokewalk. 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 Pokewalk.
You should sing that the entire time we're on our Pokewalk.
Should we take a short break?
Yeah, we could.
Ah. Clap.
We'll be back after these messages from our sponsor. Hey, Caterpie!
Hey there, Henry.
Oh, hi there, John.
You know what's cool?
What is cool?
Affordable food.
Affordable food?
Back at it again with the Taco Bell ad.
Sign me up.
If you need food that you can spend less than $5 on because you haven't had a job in 2 months and you need that food before you podcast, Taco Bell hooked you up.
Taco Bell sells multiple things for under $5.
Taco Bell sells body-warm sustenance that you can buy for a literal pittance.
Their cheese tastes like straight-up spice.
Their bananas?
Yes, their bananas are the bananas.
Their bananas. Their beans are warm. And that's about it.
And they got these cool little freezy drinks that you can drink 75% of, and then it's just like shitty ice.
Or in my case, 20% of.
Well, you got the wrong flavor.
Apparently.
Taco Bell.
Do you know what Crunchwrap is? Crunchwrap is if you took a crunchy taco and you put it on a tortilla and you wrapped it in the tortilla. It's like a goddamn food UFO.
There's a quesarito now.
What the fuck?
That's a burrito.
What the fuck?
Wrapped up in a cheese burrito.
What the fuck?
It's nutritional.
It's calories.
Calories make us go.
You need calories to live.
And it's all for under $5.
Taco Bell.
Tell your friends.
What the fuck?
Where's all the Dratinis?
What it? What an ad.
What it? What an ad.
What an ad indeed.
What an ad indeed.
Anyway, as you can probably tell, we've all been too busy looking at our phones and our Pikachus to actually watch anything other than that.
You're right. I haven't watched anything.
So I have a new segment for us.
A new segment?
Yeah.
That means we get to name it.
We do get to name it because it doesn't have a name.
Oh, man, this is my favorite part of our podcast.
Okay, you're going to see us workshop a brand new name for this new segment. This is a segment about epiphanies.
Oh.
A word coined by James Joyce. That knowledge is no epiphany to me.
It is to me.
Let's come up with a name for this segment.
Epithethize me, Captain.
Sounds as good to... You know what? Epithetize me, Captain.
Epithetize me, Captain.
A piff or a pith?
How do you say it?
Epiphany.
So a piff.
Epiphetize me, Captain.
Epiphetize me, Captain.
All right, so...
Actually, it's Cap'n.
Okay, let's... Okay, take it back from the top.
Because isn't it Cap'n Crunch?
It is.
So yeah, epithetize me, Cap'n.
Okay, let's get back to the top. All
right.
We'll edit all this out.
Epiphetize me, Cap'n.
Nailed it. So this segment is... We both come up with one or two or, I don't know, some number of epiphanies that we've had.
Wait, how do you come up with an epiphany?
You just have it. Just, you know, sudden realizations.
Oh, man. You know what's hard to recall?
Sudden realizations?
Yes.
Good thing I had one.
All right.
They made me come up with this segment. So while I talk about it, you can think of what yours is.
It's impossible to recall an epiphany. They're sudden. They're fleeting.
Okay, here's what we'll do.
All right.
We'll just say one epiphany, and then we'll talk about it.
All right.
So here's my epiphany.
All right.
So I was reading about the, and my French is bad, the Vilondanga? Donga? It's, so...
The whale dick?
What? Okay, so there's this surrealist artist, photo artist, rayograph artist, Man Ray, and he... took a picture of a woman, I think it was Kiki de Montparnasse, and he took a picture of her from behind, wearing a turban with a towel around her waist, and he put the sound holes of a violin on her back, right?
John.
Yes.
What? I understood almost nothing of that.
Okay, let's work back. What did you not understand?
There's an artist?
Yes. Man Ray.
We'll get to that later.
Okay.
There's an artist
mm-hmm.
who took a picture of a woman.
Yes.
Wearing a turban?
A turban
on her head.
A turban on her head.
And a towel around her waist.
Yes.
And put violin holes in her back.
Yeah, the sound holes from a violin, the little F holes.
F holes.
The holes you see on a violin.
All right, if you say so.
You'd recognize them if you saw them.
On her back.
Yes, he edited them onto the picture.
Photoshop?
Well, no, it was in, like, 1890.
This isn't recent.
No, it is not. It is not
you
recent.
You threw me.
Okay.
Because with French names, you literally can't tell.
So, okay. So this was a woman with the F-hole from a violin on her back.
With a turban on her head.
And a towel on her waist. And it's just keeping in the style of what Man Ray did. He liked to literally objectify women.
So he's basically turning this woman literally into a violin.
I think it's a pretty simple piece because it's just comparing the curves of the female body to the curves of a violin or a cello or a viola.
You're right.
It's really striking for that reason. It like conflates the two images. He did that a lot. He took women plus other things and like conflated the meanings of the two.
Why does she wear a turban?
I don't know. She was just wearing it.
Why does she have a towel around her waist?
Just wearing it.
These were details you pointed out to me, and I thought they were important.
I wanted to paint a word picture, but what I was actually going to say is he had another work. I got to Man Ray because I was reading about that piece because I saw it. He has another work where a woman is conflated with the idea of a coat hanger.
What?
Okay, so a woman is conflated with the idea of a coat hanger. A woman looks like a coat hanger. Don't get caught up on that one.
How?
She is standing. She is wearing a black stocking on one leg, so it looks like she only has
one leg,
which is clear, and she's nude, and her shoulders are very wide, and she's standing behind.
Now I'm getting why you're looking at these pictures.
Yes.
Because she's nude.
Yes.
All right.
But she's standing behind this coat rack face apparatus. Don't worry, it's
You
surreal.
Told me not to get stuck on this, and don't, then you're letting me get stuck on this by explaining
don't
it.
Don't get caught up in it anyway.
Okay, so this picture exists.
It's called the coat hanger, or the coat rack.
Alright.
Do you know what it's called? Portmanteau.
Instead of portmanteau?
So, a portmanteau, the two words together, mean coat carrier, right?
What?
Coat carrier. So, the French word for this coat rack,
yeah,
was transformed over time and became the word for a trunk, right?
Yeah, portmanteau.
Two?
Yeah, it's French, dude.
Wait, go Tigers.
Yeah, exactly.
Goo Tigers?
No.
Portmanteau. I just said portmanteau.
You said portmanteau.
You said portmanteau.
Portmanteau.
We'll go back to the tape.
Oh my gosh, it's portmanteau.
Anyway, portmanteau.
Let go.
Anyway, portmanteau. So, coat carrier, right? The coat carrier in English parlance meant a trunk with two sections where you would usually put one article of clothing and a different kind of article of clothing, and they would come out, but they would come back together in the middle.
Oh, okay.
And a portmanteau in, like, English is meant to mean a word where two disparate words are put together, yeah, are conflated together. Like those two articles of clothing come together in the portmanteau trunk.
This is a long walk.
That's the epiphany.
I know.
That's where portmanteau comes from. Yeah. That's crazy.
Portmanteau?
Portmanteau.
What was I saying?
Portmanteau.
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 Portmanteau?
What is happening?
Kathmandu.
What is happening?
Let's see if I can find a pronunciation.
Okay.
I'll
wait.
No, don't wait. Stall.
Okay. Isn't that a great epiphany that I had?
It was okay.
You know, I really want to read more about Dada. Even though Man Ray kind of, he hated being called a part of Dada, and he kind of divorced himself from it a little bit, but he followed the principles. He was very anti-art.
It was really quiet. Why? Hold up.
Portmanteau.
No, that's portmanteau.
Portmanteau.
Why did I say portmanteau?
I don't know.
It's toe.
You're from Louisiana.
I feel like you were saying it wrong and I corrected you and now you've switched it on me.
We will go back to the tape.
I know, but I will need to know now.
Don't worry, all of it will stay in the recording so that listeners can know who was right.
Gosh darn it.
Anyway, portmanteau.
You just said it wrong! You just did it!
Nah.
Portmanteau.
Yeah, portmanteau.
Oh my god.
So anyway, isn't that crazy?
Okay, so it was just like a trunk.
It was a trunk where two disparate kinds of clothing would meet in the middle. So that's how we got the word portmanteau in the in the, like, lexiconical definition.
That's so interesting.
That's my epiphany.
That's not... Is that an epiphany? I thought epiphanies were of significance.
No. Okay, wait. Is that more of a realization?
I think epiphanies are supposed to be, like, striking moments of sort of clarity and inspiration. Let's look it up. Stall.
Okay.
Actually, it just says an epiphany is an experience of sudden and striking realization.
Hey, I realized it strikingly.
Man.
The epiphany occurred when I saw the word portmanteau.
You know, in the long list of classical epiphanies, I'm pretty sure your epiphany that you just shared, pretty low on the rung.
Well, you know, since you're someone who can't even think of an epiphany, clearly they're not that striking! Huh?
They're supposed to be sudden and then fleeting.
Eh.
I can't think of in-the-moment things.
Yeah, that's fair. I thought of this, and I merely wrote it down for the podcast. Wait, I have two more things on there.
I'm just going to look at it.
Okay.
None of this makes sense.
It doesn't. It really shouldn't.
All right, good. I love it.
So that was a good segment.
Was it?
It was.
Epithetize me, Captain.
Yeah, epithetize me, Captain.
Epithetize me, Captain.
Okay, so...
Wait, should I come up with an epiphany?
I mean, you can't just engineer one.
No, I'm going to try to remember one.
Okay. We have other segments.
Let's
we
get
do.
To your other segments.
Okay, so this segment...
Yes?
Is, it's an oldie but a goodie.
Oh.
It's one we haven't done in a while.
Is it...
Fire the...
No, I get it. I know this one.
Okay.
Maddie's segments of segment segment.
Maddie's segments of segmented segments.
Is it that one?
Nope.
Fire the literary cannon.
Is that what it was called?
That was what we called the episode, maybe?
Okay.
What... So wait, is this the one where we have to pick...
We pick two books to go into the literary canon. However, it's been rejiggered. Because I don't think we should get rid of things from the literary
canon.
That's
what we said, but we put things on notice.
Yes.
Yeah,
we can put things on notice.
We don't throw them out of the canon. We just say, hey, you get off of my cloud.
We just say, hey, clean up your act, Canterbury Tales.
Why do you always pick on the Canterbury Tales?
Clean up your act.
All right, so this is... You got a book or something?
Yeah, I do have a book.
All right, what's your book?
My book for this week is, what have I read lately?
You brought up this segment.
I did bring up this segment. I had a book earlier. Here we go.
Okay.
My book for this segment is Joan Didion's The Year of Magical Thinking.
I feel like you brought up Joan Didion for the last time we had Arm the Literary Canon or Fire.
I think she's underrepresented in the literary canon.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Let's get a list of the literary canon.
This is the most fact-checking we have done on this podcast, literally
Joan
in history.
Didion and then literary canon.
Is there a formal list of what's in the literary canon? Probably. I thought it was one of those ephemeral ideas that couldn't be so easily listed.
It's very ephemeral. I'm just looked up Joan Didion's Wikipedia. You can keep going.
Okay. So Joan Didion's Year of Magical Thinking.
Oh, she's American?
Yes.
She'll never get in.
Only once America is destroyed.
Oh, she's a she?
Also does not bode well.
Keep going.
But the Year of Magical Thinking is the book she wrote, autobiographical book, about the year after her husband died.
That's kind of sad.
It is. She's a very effective writer, and it is one of the best books on, like, loss and grief and mourning you can ever read.
All right.
It's very sad, as you imagine, but she pulls very few punches, and she really expertly translates what grief feels like onto a page. And it's a stark reminder that even late in someone's life, as eloquent as they can be, that they can still feel things to such a massive degree, and even maybe more so than people who couldn't get their voices out there as effectively. And then her daughter died, right after the book was published. Then she made a book about her husband and daughter dying, which goes from The Year of Magical Thinking is a really... It's a pretty healthy look at grieving, pretty normal. And then the next one is just pure, bleak apathy, really sad stuff.
She won a National Book Award for nonfiction in 2005 for the book you're talking about, The Year of Magical Thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that she keeps losing people and then writing books about them, I mean, I'm not pointing any fingers, Joan Didion. But
that is motive.
Means opportunity.
All of them. This book proves she had all of them.
I want to read a quote from this Wikipedia page. It's weird. Okay, she received the National Book Foundation's annual Medal for Distinguished Contribution to American Letters in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And in this award, there's a citation that reads, "An inclusive observer of American politics and culture for more than 45 years, her distinctive blend of spare, elegant prose and fierce intelligence has earned her books a place in the canon of American literature, as well as the admiration of generations of writers and journalists." She earned her way into the canon already.
Really?
But according to Wikipedia.
Well, Wikipedia is the terminus of all knowledge.
Well, the thing about the canon is it is ephemeral. It's very ever-changing. And more women need to be added to it, especially contemporary women.
Mm-hmm.
Because the canon, when people say that, all they think of is as Canterbury Tales.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, what's his name? Ben Franklin's autobiography.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times the curriculum is dictated by these classics.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what classics can't really tell us?
What?
What life is like right now.
Yeah.
You know what might be more handy than learning about what life was like back then?
Mm-hmm.
Learning about what people are thinking now.
Yeah, absolutely. Though, to be fair, since she is in the canon, I have to go to my relief hitter on this one. And the new book to be added to the literary canon,
okay,
is Denied to the Enemy by Dennis Detweiler. It is a book about Special Forces soldiers killing Cthulhu monsters in World War II.
That sounds awesome, but why should it be in the canon?
Because it's the segment. Look, I wanted to add something to the literary canon, but, I mean, just rules of the game, it's in the canon now.
Okay.
And on notice, Aesop's Fables.
Aesop's Fables probably are not in the canon anymore.
On notice. All right. I'm belling the cat. On notice.
Belling the cat?
It's from Aesop's Fables. Don't worry about it.
I won't because...
Wait. Are you telling me that the thing I tried to put in the canon is already there and the thing I tried to remove isn't? Okay. On notice, Moby Dick.
That is definitely in the canon, and no one knows why.
Moby Dick's on notice.
You know what Moby Dick is?
Mm-hmm.
It's a manual about whaling.
You know what the white whale might represent? Obsession. You know what I'm obsessed with? Getting Moby Dick the fuck out of here.
So Moby Dick is your white whale?
Yes.
That's really funny. Oh, man. Do I have to do this segment too?
Yep.
Oh, goody. You know what I've done lately?
What?
Not read.
Don't worry. Think of a book you've ever read.
Ever?
Yeah.
Man, those Dresden Files.
You can put the Dresden Files in the canon. Look, we created this segment so we can put things in the canon. There is no gods, no masters, only zero credits.
Here we go.
Okay.
An author that I really think will be in the canon someday, but she's fairly young. And I've talked to you about her before. Her name's Karen Russell. She's got two collections of short stories, a novel and a novella right now. The first collection of short stories she made was St. Lucy's School for Girls Raised by Wolves. Something to that effect. She spins a magical tale in the way I have not really seen in an American writer. You know, she writes like Murakami, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Only she's more direct with her magical elements. It's not like people grasping for straws. It's more like the magic of reality is just around us and we're dealing with it.
Mm.
For instance, a story out of that first collection, St. Lucy's Home School for Girls Raised by Wolves. There's a story in there about a sleep camp, which is like a summer camp, but for kids who are suffering from insomnia. And so they go there to try to cure their insomnia. And the story is the point of view of the main character is like a guy who's sort of the big shot around the camp. He's been there so many years because he just can't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And the main conflict of the story is, like, he's trying to, like, talk to this girl and, like, fall in love or whatever. And then the mascot for the camp is a little sheepy sheep, and it gets stolen.
Oh, no.
And everybody's really sad, and they can't sleep anymore because their mascot got stolen.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to count him because he's a sheep.
Oh, like counting sheep.
Yeah.
Got it. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, no, she's, I don't know, I can't say her works are, like, important.
Mm.
You know, you can't hold up Karen Russell next to Joan Didion because they're just, like, apples and people who lose their husbands.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for, like, an entertaining sort of tale spun by somebody who clearly knows what she's doing, I'd recommend Karen Russell. The second collection of short stories is called Vampires in a Lemon Grove.
Mm.
Her novel's called Swamplandia.
And that's a good name for a novel. I like it.
It's about two sisters who are really young, but they help their dad run a swamp amusement park where they wrestle alligators.
Nice.
And her sister sees a ghost boyfriend. Her sister's dating a ghost.
That sounds great.
Swamplandia.
So, I mean, I usually at the end of, like, a what did you watch, we'd recommend it to the rest of our audience, but really, we're talking to you right now, either entrenched literary critics or academics. The rest of our listeners can stop listening. But if you find yourself deep in the halls of academia, or you're a literary journalist, go and seek out the newest addition to the literary canon, Denied to the Enemy, a Call of Cthulhu pulp novel about commandos killing Lovecraft monsters, and Karen Russell's Swamplandia. Or St. Lucie's Home for Girls Who Were Raised by Wolves?
Something. It's a long title. I love it, but I can't remember it.
One of those two things has been added to the canon.
And you're on notice, Moby Dick. Twice over? Yeah.
Oh, man. I think that means it's out.
No, it's got one more final notice.
Ooh. If we put Moby Dick on notice one more time, it's out.
I mean, it's basically out anyway, because more than 95% of that book is whaling manual.
It's mind-blowingly dull.
And you don't need to read the whaling manual to be able to understand the importance of the book.
If we vote for Moby Dick one more time, it gets put on a boat and pushed out to sea.
And hopefully eaten by a white whale.
The copy that is kept in the literary canon?
Fired from it.
The way the literary canon works, I don't know if you know this, but it's a massive library kept under lock and key, and everything in the literary canon is kept there in physical form.
You're right.
Every book is the platonic ideal of the book.
You're right.
And every time it escapes into the world, its magic leaks out and it changes the world. Things are kept in the literary canon to keep the world safe.
It's like that one door from The Secret of Nim that when you unlock it, all the shadows come out and ruin everything.
Exactly.
It's the wrong movie.
That's why you don't want to open the literary canon, because then Canterbury Tales gets turned loose, and everyone turns into an archetype.
Is it The Secret of Nim? Is that the movie I was describing?
I don't remember.
There's a door. There's a key and a door.
It's the Pagemaster.
It's not the Pagemaster. That has a talking owl in it.
Is it Homeward Bound?
Yes.
Is it?
I'm remembering the part where the dog gets stuck with porcupines, and I interpreted that scene as someone opening a door, all these shadow things coming out and ruining everything.
Accurate.
Oh, man.
Man, oh, man.
Have we done a good podcast today?
I mean, I feel like that first half was pretty good.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You know what that sound means.
What does that sound mean?
I don't know, you're looking at your list.
Oh, I have one last note.
Is it good?
Sure.
All right.
So, I want us to... Now, I know we've done State of the Human Address.
To bond? Were you going to say to bond?
So, we've done State of the Human Address before.
Yeah, we did it.
And we like to tell other people what to do.
We do.
Today, I want to invert that.
You want other people to tell us what to do?
No, I don't trust other people. We're going to tell ourselves what to do.
Oh, okay.
So, this segment, I like to call Great Expectations.
Oh, by Charles Dickens.
You're on notice, Charles Dickens.
Okay.
No. So, Great Expectations, no relation. And it's not Great Relations either. God knows.
So the segment's called Great Expectations, No Relation?
Yes.
Awesome.
So Great Expectations, No Relation is a segment in which we both share what we believe are unfair expectations for the world or our lives, and then we talk about it.
Okay.
So my unfair expectation is that I will be three things all at once, and that is creative, rich, and happy. All
right.
And I feel like I need to let some of that go. Because lately I've definitely been feeling like the expectation that I will have a job that is creative, that pays me well, that makes me happy. Those are three states that are impossible. It's a pick two. Because if you're rich and you're happy, you have a job that's probably not creative. Because you have a mechanistic or a helpful job that isn't inherently dependent on your performance as an ephemeral artist.
It kind of sounds like you're trying to get your whole breakfast from one chicken.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good expression.
You can't expect the chicken to give you the milk because the milk comes from the cow.
Mm-hmm.
So you might not expect your job to be creative, rich, and happy.
Happy.
You might get your creativity from another avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Your happiness will definitely come from another avenue. And the richness, as far as the government tells us, will never come.
Yay!
So you can be creative and happy and then have enough money to pay rent.
I definitely feel like I want to be creative and happy above all else.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I'm going to have a job that's not going to be particularly creative. But I'm going to seek out creativity from, you know, hobbies. Hobbies that I never really ever intend to turn a profit from.
Okay.
Like, we do comedy. I like doing comedy. And I don't really want to get paid to do it. I just like to be creative and do that.
Or like this podcast.
Yeah.
Which will never make us any money.
Exactly.
But we do because, hey, it feels like a... feels? It fills a creative sort of itch that we have, and we like to hear the sound of our own voices.
Exactly. It's nice to have a product. No matter who you are, it's nice to have a thing that you can put out into the world and see it, like, flourish.
And also, you can upset people in Colorado on Twitter for misusing a hashtag.
You can do that. And that happened.
Yeah. So, I guess I have to come up with an expectation?
Yes.
That I don't want put on me?
No, I mean, like, you're just talk about an expectation that you have that you believe might be unfair.
An unfair expectation.
Yeah.
I gotta think, man.
These are the easy... Look, epiphanies, unfair expectations. These are things you should be thinking about all the time.
What? You sprung all this on me. Oh, I got one.
All right.
I think it's unfair for your co-host to not prompt you for sort of any of the segments that he's going to introduce today.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the spot, he wants you to think of an epiphany,
mm-hmm.
and then an expectation and a book. Man, like,
okay.
People don't have to be prepared for the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that at all.
Yeah.
Wait a second. No, people should be prepared for most... This is confusing.
People should be prepared for the unknown. But I mean, you know, now that you have an expectation, how do you feel you can better yourself about that?
I should... Wait, you're flipping this on me to make me seem like a bad person.
That's what this segment is about, bettering yourself.
You gotta flip yours.
What?
How do you flip yours to make you a better person?
I said my unfair expectation is I want these three things, I need to let them go.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess my... stupid getting better thing is I need to just roll with the punches.
Yeah, roll with the punches better. You've done an admirable job of that today.
Have I?
Yeah.
I didn't participate in the epiphany one.
I mean, if you consider the fact that something that we've been able to rest on our laurels about for a long time is the What Did You Watch segment.
Yeah.
It's pretty admirable that there are essentially three brand new segments that I came up with. I didn't even, like, think of them, but, like... I knew we didn't have things for What Did You Watch, really.
We need to always be introducing new segments, because that's the lifeblood of the show.
Mm-hmm. We can't rest on our laurels. We can't sit on our haunches.
What if we have a new segment called Rest on Our Laurels, and we just do nothing?
That'd be cool.
Cool.
You know, there was this video I saw today.
Did it have a crow in it?
It did not. There was this video I saw today... Why am I saying this?
I don't know.
There was this video I saw today from that scene in Gladiator.
Oh, where, with the say your name?
Yeah, he's like, tell me your name. He's like, my name is Maximus Decimus Decimus Maximus Maximus Decimus Maximus Maximus. It's pretty good. I like it.
All right, everyone go watch that video.
Everyone somehow Google that video.
And that's the end of Great Expectations.
That's the end of Great Expectations.
No relations.
No relations.
And so the,
no great relations.
The message they got from that was, go watch that YouTube video.
Go watch that YouTube video. Don't feel like you need to be creative, happy, and rich, all from one source.
And roll with the punches. No matter what life throws your way, you are Maximus Decimus Decimus Maximus Maximus Decimus Decimus Maximus.
Perfect. I feel like we tied that together in the end.
Man, so much string.
So much string. It's like one of those boards where people are trying to catch murderers.
Oh, yeah, conspiracy theorist board.
You have HBO Go, right?
I do. Should I watch The Night Of?
You absolutely should.
There's only, like, what, an episode out?
There's one episode, there'll be a second one 5 days.
Alright.
It went up on HBO Go, like, 2 weeks before it aired.
Cool.
It's real good.
Alright.
You should watch it.
I will.
So then we'll have something to talk about.
Yay! I feel like we should wrap this up.
Yeah, I feel like we're,
fading a little fast.
I feel like we're gilding the lily.
What? Where are you getting these expressions?
I feel like we're,
Is that from Aesop's Fables too?
Have you ever heard of belling the cat?
No.
You know the basic...
Wait, is that tying a bell around a cat?
Yes.
To make sure you know where the cat is?
Yes, actually, that's literally what it is.
Oh, now I understand the expression.
Well, you know how Aesop's Fables always work? They're like, it's a short story, and then they're like... And then the old one said, then there's an open quotation, then there's like huge block of text that's like bippity boppity boppity.
Bippity boppity boppity?
Basically, all these mice are like, we can't get the cheese if the cat eats us. And then they're like, but if we knew where the cat was, we'd be able to eat the cheese. And then they said, we should tie a bell to the cat. And everyone cheered. And then an old mouse was like, but who will tie the bell to the cat? And no one cheered. So, the lesson from that fable is, it is easy to propose impossible solutions.
But?
That's it. That's it.
But it's harder to carry out the plan to do it.
No, that's it. That's all the fable says. It's easy to propose impossible solutions.
That's not a moral.
It's a moral.
No, that's like an observation.
Yeah. A lot of Aesop's fables are just kind of observations.
Slow and steady wins the race is a moral. It has a message. It's not an observation.
Hmm.
Oh my gosh, John. All right. That's it.
Yes.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Zero Credits.
That's that podcast.
That's been John.
That's been Henry.
And together we've been John and Henry.
And if you want to get in contact with us,
you can.
At
ZCPCWHJ on Twitter.
Or zerocreditsisapodcast@gmail.com is the email address. Send us questions, comments, concerns, corrections.
And if you check out the Twitter, just ignore the part where half of Colorado is really mad at me for some reason.
Ignore Colorado.
Ignore that.
If you're listening, Colorado, we're sorry.
Yeah, we're so sorry. It was trending, and I wanted to just use a hashtag, and it was trending, and so I did it, and suddenly everyone was mad at me.
Don't worry, delete all the tweets.
I would, but I felt like that was going to be like, I'm trying to cover it up, and it would be a bigger scandal than it is.
Yeah, don't delete them.
They're still there.
Man up to what you've done.
ZCPCWHJ on Twitter.
Browse our Twitter feed to see our mistakes.
ZeroCreditsIsApodcast@gmail.com.
Send us an email to see your mistakes.
John's going to set up an Instagram.
Sure.
Bye.
What the fuck can a podcast take pictures of? That was weird.